Computer, this is Data.
I'm an android. I'm
Rangers League basketball.
I was processing all of the information.
Processing.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Rangers League basketball.
Analytics was crap.
Does not compute.
Just because you got good stats doesn't mean you're a good team.
Hello and welcome back to the Lakers Exceptionalism Podcast. Welcome to the 2022-23 season, everyone. Today I am joined, as always, by Tim, aka Cranjus McBasketball. Now, Tim, if any day was meant for us, the Exceptionalism Day, it's 2022 Media Day. This is our day because these are words and not basketball. They're basketball words. But we haven't seen the basketball yet, and you can make all these words sound real nice if you string them together in the right way. So today we're going to be talking about Media Day, Tim. I know I set you up in like the most awkward ways possible there. I just wanted to say this is our day. This is where we get to be exceptional, even though we're just going to be like normal. I don't really have any exceptional takes for us. I'm sorry.
No, everybody's undefeated. Everybody's excited for basketball. It's hard to lose Media Day. I think the Suns might not have done such a hot job.
Yeah, disagree.
It's difficult to lose Media Day. And I would say that the Lakers, you know, there are a couple bumps here and there, some odd answers occasionally, some interesting questions, but for the most part, pretty solid. No major headlines, I'd say, in a bad way, the way that a couple other teams have encountered. So, you know, check the box. I don't know that we learned a ton, but I do think seeing some similarities between answers has given us a little bit more insight as to how this team will be operating moving forward.
That's what's so tough, right? Is there's like Media Day is usually pretty boring. Like I didn't see anything out of the, you know, Cleveland Cavaliers Media Day today on Twitter. I know it's all anecdotal. I'm just saying if everything goes right, nothing happens. And you know, you give nothing to the press to, you know, pontificate about or question. You accept the basketball and, you know, full steam ahead. Awesome. But on a team like the Lakers, who has so much personal turmoil, it seems, interpersonal turmoil and uncertainty with the Russell Westbrook situation, you know, just there's so many questions, right, about so many different people. And you also want to talk about basketball. So I think that's what we're going to primarily focus on is what was said in a basketball sense. I don't really want to talk about Patrick Beverley's answers about, you know, him, you know, making a scene and saying Russell Westbrook's his best friend. And
they had a romantic candlelit dinner or something like that. He said that, like he had a fake answer about how they like courted each other and had a really romantic time or something like that. We'll talk basketball.
We'll talk the basketball stuff. I do think there's a lot of interesting stuff said. I mean, mainly from Darvin Ham, who I saw the most from personally. We're doing this the day after, but there was, you know, some interesting comments here and there, some consistent, I would say, phrases, Tim, that we could maybe jump in first here on defense, which has seemed like had the best, most coherent kind of very confident plan. This is our identity. They want to contain, contest, and control. You know, Ham talked about it. LeBron talked about it. They have a similar, I think they're trying to go for something more similar to the 2020 team in trying to put a lot of that ball pressure up front at the point of attack. Guys like Patrick Beverley, Dennis Schroeder, Kendrick Nunn. You know, and having that length on the back end, they have a little bit more than they did with Montrezl Harrell as a backup center. So do you think that philosophy and where they're going is, you know, the right way? It sounds like they are where they want to be in that sense.
It's a very big picture answer. And I don't think that, like, if you would have asked the other 29 NBA head coaches, like, do you want to do this? They're going to say, yeah. It's very, you know, make teams take hard shots, don't get beat, contest the shots that are being taken, and then grab rebounds. That's a very, like, there are only so many things you can go for in basketball defensively, and those are, like, major ones. So while it's not a, you know, unique answer or something, like, wild or unsurprising, What I did like about it was Ham mentioned it, Bron mentioned it, AD kind of talked about it, Beverly talked about it. They know what they know the talking points. And something I've heard as like an elevator test for a company or a team or whatever is if you should know what the values are for, you know, where you're working. Everybody from top to bottom should know, what do we stand for? What's important to us? If you were to step into an elevator and, you know, ask the person in the elevator, hey, you know, what are our values? What do we care about? They should be able to rattle them off to you, no matter who it is. And it seems like this team, they get, at least defensively, exactly what the coaching staff wants from them. And maybe, you know, what they're projecting outward publicly is more of the high level talking points. But Wendy Gabriel said something like, here's a quote, Ham is very clear with how he wants us to play. There's not a lot of confusion, which I love. I want that. Something we loved about that title Lakers team was everybody knew their roles. And a lot of how we've heard guys talk about Darvin Ham is he's very both collaborative, but very clear in terms of what he's looking for. I don't know that it's profound, but it's good stuff. And to your point, having length off ball and then those pests on ball is another thing that we heard from several guys. We heard Rob Pelinka and Darvin Ham talk about how they, you know, Dennis Schroeder and Pat Beverly are guards that'll pick up full court. And then they talked about having length away from the ball. And we heard these same themes throughout hearing the players talk as well. So it seems like that's something they want to get back to. They may not have size 1 through 5, which some teams want to be very switchy, but this team seems like they want size away from the ball, but then they also want to be able to like get up in your face and make life difficult for you as a ball handler and as a passer by having that ball pressure.
I think Austin Reeves is another guy who absolutely fits this scheme as well, right? We talked about like the versatility that you want from these different guys, right? Is being able to slide into a chaser role really quick, from that to a point of attack to some, you know, pick and roll defense. So I think we talked about this when we got to the rotations part of this, where, you know, I put Austin Reeves at the three, or you put Austin Reeves at the one, and vice versa for Patrick Beverly. And a lot of this can move around depending on your matchup, which is good. And it sounds like they're confident with that. I mean, sounds like Nunn is healthy. You know, he's talking about him playing more full time. So that makes me more confident. We recently added Schroeder, who is another point of attack pest. That this just kind of happened. We didn't have Patrick Beverly a month ago. Now we have Patrick Beverly, Dennis Schroeder, and Kendrick Nunn's back. So I'm feeling more optimistic in the backcourt. Again, we talked, you know, recently about having that alternative for Russ. If you do want to send him home, and, you know, we'll talk later about Russ and his kind of professional canned answers, but he said the right thing. He said the boring thing, which is new. It's kind of a refreshing change, if I'm being honest, about how little drama there was overall. Whether you believe him or not, like, that's fine. But he didn't actively kind of, you know, spread fuel on that fire.
I think some of his answers did a little bit, in that they lobbed him a couple questions that it would have been easy to say yes to. Like, does the team want you? Do you feel wanted? Or like, did you have a preferred destination this offseason? He could have easily said like, yeah, I want to be a Laker. I want to give this a shot. And like, yes, you know, that I, you know, talking to the guys, like, they want me here. We want to figure this out. He didn't say that. He said like, yeah, you know, at work, sometimes people don't like you or something like that. Like he gave a bunch of non-answers in a way that he didn't, you know, there was no smoking gun, like awful quote that you're like, oh, this guy's a jerk, or he said something terrible. Chemistry's horrific. But he also didn't, you know, finish a couple of the layups that were given to him as well. So I don't know. I don't feel great about it. I don't feel great about it, but I guess I also liked that from a coaching staff standpoint, they're not seeing him, or at least in Darvin Ham's answer yesterday, they're not, you know, saying this is our starter. It doesn't seem like they're going to throw away a couple weeks or months to start the season with rotations that reflect how much guys are paid rather than who they think are the best players. And I think in my season outlook for this team, how quickly they figure the rotations out and figure out who their best players are matters a lot for winning games. That's going to impact standings at the end of the year. Does it take 0, 10, 20, or 30 games to figure out that, you know what, I don't think we should have Russ starting, or maybe we should send him home, or maybe Lonnie Walker should be playing below this guy or that guy? Those sorts of things they need to figure out quickly. And it seems like, you know, publicly that they've said the right things, and behind the scenes, I feel, from what I've heard, I feel more confident as well that we're going to see the team start off, you know, giving it their best shot from game one, at least heading into training camp.
I mean, I really feel like a lot of that comes from Ham. Mm-hmm. I think he's a very charismatic leader that commands respect with these guys. And a lot of that is the honeymoon phase where it's new, but they believe and they like what they've heard to this point. And, you know, we'll see what happens when adversity hits. But he's a very well-spoken, clear, you know, tough but firm and fair kind of leader, at least from the outside looking in, with him talking about, you know, turning the page, looking out the windshield, not the rearview mirror, kind of accepting that he understands it's not his fault, but that we need to bear that chip. He has to have a chip on his shoulder, even though he wasn't here or responsible for any of this. That's the mantra it needs to build up this chemistry. And I really liked, you know, I didn't love what Plinka said about, you know, kind of hedging the trade assets in there, but he spoke about, you know, going over with Ham over hundreds of hours, going over and over again how he wants this team to reflect the qualities he stands for most. Our Lakers fans deserve one thing, a team that's going to compete the hardest of any team in the NBA. And I think that kind of leadership from Ham, getting a guy like Beverly, fits into a lot of this stuff. Even like Schroeder just played hard. You know, a lot of it was playing hard and kind of dumb sometimes, being too gung-ho. But I thought he played hard and competed when he was here. Mm-hmm. So it's, yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic, at least about the first few weeks, where I don't think I would have been. And I don't mean optimistic like 5-0 in these first five games, but they're saying the right things, they're doing the right things. And I like the defensive philosophy that they've laid out. And the influx of talent at the guard position, you know.
Yeah, they have a clear vision defensively. They've aligned players to it, and we saw that yesterday. They brought people in that match what they're looking for from a not just an on-court like physical tools or skill set standpoint, but also from a game approach and defensive ownership standpoint. Beverly, JCA, like bringing in guys like that, they've got some detail-oriented dudes that, you know, enjoy playing defense and want to be able to impact the game on that end of the court. They've transferred something that I've seen this, God, nearly every team I've ever played on or worked with or worked around, the concept of getting a kill, getting three stops in a row. It's a little thing. It's a silly little, silly is maybe not the right word, but it's not something profound. It's not unique. Plenty of teams do this at the middle school, high school, college, professional levels. But the value add with it is that it gets your players to really own defense. If you're constantly thinking about it, they're going to do better at it. They're going to care about it more. They talked about aligning minutes to who's caring and trying on defense. Those are ways to, at the team level and at the individual level, align players to, you know, align what they see as success to what the team sees as success at the coaching level. So we haven't seen, you know, scheme coverages and things like that, but for what they were able to tell us and what we were able to learn defensively, I like what I'm hearing. I see ownership, I see accountability, I see alignment, I see a vision, and they've brought in personnel to match that. So I'm a fan. It's very clear that the guys that they have on this team are able to do things Ham wants to do from knowing what we know about Darvin Ham in the past. So it's not like a throwaway year because the coach doesn't match the personnel or something like that. So I like that. It seems like Ham's been pretty consistent. Wenyi Gabriel, again, not a guy who's going to play a ton, but he had some insightful answers. One thing that he brought up that I thought was important, I haven't seen highlighted, is he was somebody that played for Milwaukee's G League team. He was around Darvin Ham and his philosophies and what he cares about. And he spoke to the fact that what he saw there has very directly translated to LA. So Ham is still himself. It's not like the Lakers brought in a coach and then are trying to take away some of the things that they liked most about him, or some of the schematic things that make him as strong as he is. We're getting what we were hoping to get with him defensively. So I'm a fan. We'll have to see how it plays out. But, you know, one for one in terms of, you know, they're saying the right things and doing the right things. And I feel good about the defense.
The only thing here is I feel like, despite Russell Westbrook's words, I feel like we have a unstoppable force versus immovable object path incoming. Because what did we describe about these kind of defense on the point of attack or on the wing where Russ would be? You have to be a pest, tenacious. Do you think? Do we think Russell Westbrook is going to play tenacious defense?
No, I don't think so. I think a Russ defensively is not one of the pests that they're talking about. He's not Pat Beverly. He's not Dennis Schroeder. Kendrick Nunn talked about a tenacity and a toughness as well. Those are the guys they're talking about as a pest. I think Russ is going to be one of the guys away from the ball that they see more as being able to switch and have some length and hopefully rotate well. I see them probably using him as like a helper or low activity wing defensively.
So
at this point,
his version of, you know, tenacious defense or extra effort that will keep him on the court is going to be help defense and wing and like
rotations, boxing out, playing passing lanes. He's not going to be a wing stopper. They're not going to throw him on high difficulty on ball players, but it's going to come down to rotating, boxing out, and playing passing lanes for him.
Do you see that happening?
It can happen because those are things that
has he ever made those reads as a defender consistently?
He's been a good defensive rebounder in the past. I don't know that he's been a great defensive box out guy. I can't speak to what his rotation is used to look like. He's always been a very high,
like that's a high activity. That's a high basketball. And I'm not saying anything. I don't think he has this skill personally. It's a very high basketball IQ thing to understand where to go and when, and how to like stunt at one and even kind of like be in two places. Because you're the free safety role at that point where you have to come over and help, but also not step over so much that, you know, your guy gets a wide open three, or you can play that yo-yo and be in two places at once, or at least try to. Like, this is just not, I'm sorry. Like, you're right, in theory, is this path to success. If that's how he has to play to stay on the court, like, I cannot see it.
Yeah, it's a better fit for him at this point than playing at the point of attack, I guess I'd say. I just pulled up some quick basketball index metrics. He used to be much higher in terms of his defensive involvement rate. He used to. So it's not like he hasn't ever. He's never been a great defender, but we've certainly seen a really bad version of him recently. And I think putting him in a position where it's not, okay, go stay in front of guys that you're not quick enough to stay in front of anymore. It's more very directly, we can evaluate you against your like will in your energy as a rebounder and a just basic rotation. This doesn't have to be complex things. He's not going to erase plays like Giannis or AD and in those 2v1 yo-yo situations like you're talking about, but can you make some simple rotations? And if he can't, it's going to be very clear on film and they're going to be able to hold him accountable and say, this is what we needed you to do and you can't do it. So that's why we're taking the coaching, you know, the route we're going to take if they do need to lower his minutes. I think it's a role that it's going to come down to whether he is willing to put in the work or not. It's not as much an ability thing as it is an effort thing. Now, he's certainly undersized for a helper. And to your point, he's not the most skilled IQ defensive rotator. So he won't be high end in this role. He needs to be passable in this role. I'm skeptical. I think you're skeptical. But if he truly has some sort of, you know, comes Jesus, like, all right, this is what I need to do to have my place in this league, it's possible. And that's I think, the best we can hope for at this point. Because I don't know, if you make him a chaser, he's not going to do well. If you make him a point of attack, he's not going to do well. So I think this is what it has to be. And then it comes down to his you know, effort or not.
Yes, he basically said he was willing to do whatever it took to help the team succeed. Kind of in so many words. Right, prove it. And Darvin Ham has, you know, said, quote, he's been awesome. Everything I've asked of him, he's done. Everything has been about being selfless, being team-oriented, defense. Again, let's prove it. I want to see this this player, because otherwise it's a giant hole in the salary cap that's not providing anything. Mm-hmm. And even though it might make the team better to go without him, now that they have some depth, it's still just you will just get more out of something than not. So I don't want to spend all the time on Russ. I just wanted to point out that he did say he was down to do anything. And Tim just laid out what it would take for him to find success in lineups, especially on the defensive end. So let's see if he does it. If we see more clips of him falling asleep and getting backdoor cut and just not even like getting in an athletic position to go catch up, you know what I mean? If we see mm-hmm. that, he's going home. That, and I believe Ham when he says that. So I do feel better about that part of the equation, at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another, I guess, turning to offense, we didn't hear a whole lot. There wasn't much X's and O's talk.
Wait, no. Their offense is defense. We already talked about it.
It's the best offense, is how Ham put it. And I don't disagree with him. It's good to be in transition.
I'm so sick of that, Tim.
It's good to understand how they connect.
How many transition fucking possessions do the best defensive teams in the league get, Tim? And how much more is it than the medium, the average?
I'm not prepared to answer this question.
It's not that different, but it's not that different.
Yeah.
Like, it makes you a much better team.
Yeah. It makes you a better team. At the end of the day, like 70% of your offensive possessions or more are going to be half court.
Yes.
And so you can't punt that.
So if they're, I saw this and I was like, oh my God, here we go again. I'm getting Vogel vibes. But they did say some other things about trying to make AD's life easier. I'm sorry I interrupted you. I just had to.
Well, to your point.
I'm sick of it. I want offense. I don't want defense.
Yeah, we want real offense. We want real offense. The Lakers and the Bucks had this exact same number of transition points per game last year. or maybe it was possessions. It was one or the other. I don't have it in front of me. Yeah. So for the offense, not the defense offense, he put out the phrase, fast, physical, and free. He explained that by fast, he means to like run in transition. He did not explain the other ones. And then went and talked about something else. But I'm assuming by physical, he means having some like big lineups and being able to like pound the offensive boards is my best guess here.
Ball, maybe, you know,
I don't know what else decisions. It would mean. To be physical?
Oh, sorry. I meant I was on the fast part.
No, physical. Yeah. I don't know what else physical would mean. He did talk about wanting to get Bron, AD, and Russ in the post. Maybe by physical, he means that a little bit. I don't know. And then the last word he used was free. And that can mean a whole lot of things. That can mean we don't have an offense.
Exactly what I thought. I thought you would do it, LeBron.
My best spin of what it could mean, and again, I don't feel great about this, is maybe he means that by free, he means that they're going to free their star players from having to deal with double teams.
It's the jazz band analogy we kind of mentioned last year, right? Like, he wants them to be a good jazz band on their own because they're good basketball players. It's like, you guys figure it out. You're good basketball players.
I don't know.
My generous in reading of it.
I'm going to say he did talk about making life easier and not letting teams double team AD in the post. He did mention that. So I don't know if that's what he meant by free, but it could be a meaning of what free meant. So that's what I'm going to choose to believe at this point. We're going to know pretty quickly whether or not the scheme's any good in preseason. Looking back at Summer League, they had some good sets. Their pick and roll play was very, very bland and vanilla. I went through those clips again today. It was not inspiring, but we'll give them some time. He did talk, AD talked about last year the struggle of like him and Bron and Russ trying to like figure out who to play through or who to get involved when. And it just sounded like there was no structure on offense, which we know already, but it was one thing to hear like their side of it and how that's challenging. Hopefully that's different this year, but that was, you know, more of a comment to last year that stood out to me. And then one more thing with offense, Darvin Ham said that they're looking for shooters. Shooting is a skill they need. They might have guys develop internally. Maybe they'll look externally. I think actually Palenka mentioned this, but one of the two of them mentioned that they're not looking for specialists. They want basketball players. And what I think this means is shooting is a skill that they want, but they're not going to turn into like the phrase, like single issue voters, like for like voting in elections where it's like, you know, both of these people have completely, you know, 20 different things that they're campaigning on, but I'm going to make my decision based on one specific issue and go with one route over the other. A lot of people as Laker fans are saying we need shooting and I don't care about anything else. They don't need to be able to dribble. They don't need to be able to play defense. They don't need to be able to rebound. As long as they can shoot, they can find a place on this court. And that's not the way you should be looking at basketball. It's not the way teams are looking at basketball. You need to be able to kind of hold your own in those other areas. So they're looking for guys that can add value with shooting while not taking too much away in other spots on the court. I think that's my interpretation of what I'm hearing. And I think it's a smart approach.
RIP. RIP Cole like, Swider.
So Swider, you know, he's got to work up that defense. And then if he can get it to a good place, he can play. If they only cared about shooting, they'd go grab Melo, or they'd go grab Wayne Ellington, or they go grab some of these other guys that don't have jobs because they don't play defense. Evidently, that's not their perspective, and I think my interpretation aligns with the team's decisions thus far in terms of who they're bringing in. So that's my take there.
Yeah, I mean, generally, I can't say the offensive side excited me much at all. It just kind of seemed like more of the same. I think this is just kind of how LeBron teams have been. Yeah, I've talked about it.
Hard to talk about, Tom. Like, what are they going to say? Darvin Ham's going to be like, well, you have all the best plays. You guys just wait. We're going to run all these fantastic. Like, nobody says that. Nobody really talks about like that.
Okay, but when you say, okay, fast, again, you're using physical attributes, saying that your physical attributes are kind of so much better than the other teams, you're going to rely on that to be better. When you laid it out, how they laid out their priorities, right? This is a similar thing we heard when Russ got here. They're going to be fast. Showtime's back. Blah blah blah. It doesn't mean as much as having structure or at least a willingness to do these like successive actions that flow together. This is just not really like they don't have these like a lot of actions that flow into each other that set up something three steps down the line. It's really one read, one B read, ISO or dump to the post, and it's really stagnant and I'm just over it, especially hosting a podcast with you, Tim.
Your Vogel PTSD is showing, Tom. We need to give these guys a chance. We need to give them a chance. Hey, Darvin Ham mentioned that he was drawing a play up. Palenka, one of them said like they were upstairs drawing up an offensive set, and AD said, "Don't worry about that, coach. I got you. Just give me the ball," or something like something along those lines, which is, you know, not what we want to hear. But it's good that he's got that attitude, I suppose.
He's as free as a dog chasing cars.
To your earlier question, these are the teams that were in transition most frequently last year. Memphis, Charlotte, the Lakers, the Bucks, the Raptors, the Timberwolves, and the Rockets. Most of the teams were bad defensive teams.
Interesting. Because they're relying on these plays to bolster their offense. So they were more likely and willing to get into transition. That's interesting because like half of those teams are bad and half of the teams were okay.
Yeah, I there's more than one way to get to transition.
Fair.
So I don't know. It's not something that we can simplify too much, but I don't know. So
it's just not a primary offense. We feel good about the defense.
It can't be. Anyone who's pitching it as your primary offense is they're trying to fool you or they're fooling themselves. So okay, for the defense, I'd say we feel pretty good. For the offense, we're skeptical. I'll say we're skeptical. We have to see what it looks like.
Yeah.
But I do like that they talked about making life easier for Bron and AD in the post. That's something that, like, not letting teams double team is going to be important. JTA talked about it. He said how, like, hey, playing with Steph Curry, I had to learn about how, oh, wow, he's going to get double teamed. Rather than playing the way I normally would around players, I have to, like, play differently, knowing that the double team's going to come. And once I adjusted to that, it made me a great partner with him. I'm going to carry that over to playing with LeBron because teams like to send help against him as well. So that kind of attitude, that attention to detail, that feel for the game is, you know, a fun added bonus that I'm excited to see. And I want to see more guys figuring out those little things and see how the team handles those situations, because that will matter. Because at the end of the day, if you can switch ball screens and off ball screens and give up mismatches and then send help and the team doesn't counter the help, there's no reason for you to never stop doing that. Like, that was kind of the, like, death spiral last year's team fell into, and we don't want to see that moving forward. So that's going to be a really key piece to whether this team can succeed or not this year.
I guess I just don't have a lot to go off of, to mm-hmm. your point.
And that's fine. Yeah, that's fine.
I'm projecting. You're right. Thank you for, you know, putting me through some therapy.
He's gone, Tom. He's not coming back. You know who is coming back? Darvin Ham said he's been consulting with Quinn Snyder.
Interesting.
Is some free some pro bono consulting, and I'd say both offensively and defensively, I'm a fan of that.
Excellent.
It's not going to be, you know, Darvin Ham's just running Quinn Snyder stuff now, but I certainly think, you know, while there were holes in what Snyder did, there was a lot of good stuff that he did. So if you could pick any coach not currently coaching to be helping Darvin Ham, I would say Quinn Snyder. So I'm excited by that.
Well, there's no cap on assistant coaches, right? You can always add more.
Yeah, that's true. Sit in the front of the bench.
Yeah, there's limited bench availability, but, you know, legends really sit in the second row, if you know.
That's right.
All right, let's take a quick break and we'll finish out the rest of this media day.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, we're back. I would say the number one thing that was echoed throughout this media day was, at least through the stars, through as like a general kind of mantras, we need to stay healthy and stay available. We know what Bron and AD have gone through the last couple seasons after the championship. It's a little bit of this, a little bit of that. No one thing I think you can point to other than these guys were asked to do a lot and they're very great basketball players. And their lives were very difficult on offense at times. They were expected to do a lot on defense, and they got hurt. They're getting older, whatever excuse you want to make. But it was interesting to me how LeBron was framing it and his tone and the way – he's very deliberate with his words. It's it's like an acceptance that I cannot put this team on my back for 65 straight games. I will not, I guess, is more of a what he's saying, because maybe he can still if he really wanted to. He's basically telling us he will not do that, I think, Tim. And throughout whatever that means, throughout a game to game basis, how he performs in a night in night basis, I think you will see him take a step back a little bit in terms of imparting himself onto the game, because he's just whatever the win loss, wherever it falls, I need to be here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the I guess the question that he was answering there was something along the lines of like, hey, in previous seasons at Media Day, you said this year my focus is going to be playmaking. This year my focus is going to be scoring because we need scoring. What is your like? What's that item this year? And his answer was availability. And we understand why, but to your point, okay, well, if that is what his focus is, how do you get there? How do you can't just, you know, do the same things and say, oh, you know, well, I'll get luckier this time. If they really want to try to own that, I think it does come with him shouldering less of a burden when he is playing and perhaps playing a little bit less as well from a minute per game standpoint, or maybe taking more off days here and there, just so that rather than him needing to miss 3 weeks in a row, he's going to miss like, you know, two games every 3 weeks to, or one game every 3 weeks to just help maintain his body or something like that. So I would imagine more so than in any season in the past, we might see him lean more into load management. I know it's not, you know, a fun thing for him and others, but if that's what ultimately is going to help this team, you know, reach their goals, even if on a night-by-night basis, it may not mean the Lakers are giving it 100%, that might be the way to go. And Darvin Ham mentioned it as well. Like, we don't need these guys playing playoff minutes in October, November, December, January. Or November, December, January. I forget whatever months he named at the beginning of the year. They're going to start with a broader rotation and then consolidate and ramp guys up as they get closer to the end of the year. And I think that will benefit LeBron and AD's availability in very direct ways.
I mean, we mentioned it last pod. Like, the more I hear, more I think about it, I really do think we might see like an 11-man rotation on a pretty regular basis, you know.
Mm-hmm. Especially
when Russ is here.
Yeah, either that or like a 10.5 man, right? Like, or maybe a 10 man where somebody's resting every day or something.
Right,
like that.
Right.
I don't know. I think we're going to see bodies though, especially early in the year.
But the Lakers do have a couple of like nagging injuries right now, with Lonnie Walker, who's experienced a small ankle problem over the last couple of weeks, and then Troy Brown, who has been held out as well. It doesn't look like major things there, but something to monitor. Probably won't see them right away in the preseason or limited roles. And then Schroeder is still in Germany. He's having some visa issues, but they hope to have him back in town in the next week or so. You know, the fact that this whole, you know, health availability question was such a big issue at Media Day, it's not a great thing for the season, but it does sound like the Lakers know where they're at and have the self-awareness to recognize, hey, like I didn't hear a lot of talk about championship expectations, Tim, right? You hear these buzzword when you think teams think they're good. And we did hear that before. Didn't hear that. But you did hear Rob talk about, we do have a couple of shots in the bank with these picks, and we understand we only have one shot with them. Okay. No shit, Sherlock, but I digress. We do kind of have a sense for where the Lakers see themselves, and it's closer to where I think we see them than I thought they would be. I thought they might be a little delusional about where they are in the process, but it seems like they have some perspective. What did you get that feeling at all?
Yeah, I got that feeling just comparing last year to this year, even seeing how those answers differed, seeing how the vibe differed. I agree with you, and I think it aligns too with the actions the front office has taken this offseason. Like, if they thought they were really close, they'd probably be more willing to spend those picks now. And my interpretation of their behavior so far has been they realize that they're not there yet, and they're going to try to figure out over the first couple weeks of the season if they are a move away. And if they're not a move away, if they're like three moves away, then they're just going to hang on to those assets. Because like they're not going to waste a trade away that's not going to ultimately impact the outcome. And I think, you know, that approach is what we saw from them in talking about availability. And to some extent, it's also, you know, reactionary to last year. The big story with Kendrick Nunn, LeBron James, Anthony Davis, all injuries. Russ wasn't injured. He didn't talk about injuries as much. Like Reeves fell off towards the end of the year, the long season. So he talked about that. Like a lot of these guys directly addressed their situation last year or what they felt didn't go well last year, either through reporter questions, you know, asking them about those topics or them bringing it up themselves. So I think that's just a natural thing that will shape the discussion.
The other thing I wanted to bring up, I guess, is just an overall idea of the chemistry, what we've heard. Right? This kind of ties a little bit in with Russ, but I don't really want to talk too much about Russ. We kind of had that conversation. It's like the answers, like the non-answers from Pelinka about whether or not Russ is going to be on the team. Like, it's not just Russ that's saying all the right things, heavy air quotes, you know, italicized air quotes. It's more that it's down the line you're hearing it. And so it feels very fake to me. I'm not in the building. What do I know? Maybe they believe this stuff. Maybe Patrick Beverley and Russell Westbrook had an ironic turn of life and became close. You know, maybe they're not being sarcastic, but come on, Tim. What the fuck am I supposed to do? I'm supposed to believe you guys are good and you just want to be one unit and bleed for each other? Go fuck yourselves. Like, I'm sorry.
I think Rob said, no. I think Rob was actually more honest than I was anticipating. He's in the past been very hyperbolic or just straight up lied in certain situations. He could have been like, oh yeah, you know, the Russ is our guy. We're going to, you know, ride with him, whatever. He was very noncommittal about Russ being on the team at like this game one or game 82. And I think that speaks to the reality of the situation. So both from a Pelinka standpoint and a Russ standpoint, they weren't pretending that everything was all rainbows and unicorns. You could kind of see that, you know, there's this ongoing situation happening in the background. Now, the Beverly and Russ dynamic, I kind of believe that, like, they're competitors, they're going to go at it, and then, like, when they're on the same team, it could be different. Like, that kind of stuff happens. I don't know, maybe I'm not as clued into why people thought it was so personal in the past. Maybe it still is, maybe they're trying to mend that, but like they've been working out together, just the two of them early in the morning, like getting work in. So like that's real tangible stuff. They're trying to make it work. Whether or not they're there yet, I don't know, but it's very clear that they understand that if they are to reach their goals, they can't be having those sorts of issues, and they're taking steps now to try to fix that. I do appreciate that from them.
I don't know. Maybe it's just that he hates them. Maybe he hates Russ the least. Or Russ hates Pat Bev the least.
You really don't like Pat Beverly.
Is it that obvious?
Well, you did say it on the podcast where we talked about getting him. I think I'm more open to the idea of Pat Beverly. Tom, you just don't seem to enjoy him as a personality.
Like, he's just the shit stirrer, and I get, like, if he was just doing it for the lols and the memes, like, it's funny, but they got into a beef because he injured Russell Westbrook in the playoffs. Like, he sucks. I'm sorry. He's pretty good at basketball, which is cool because he's on my favorite team, but no, I'm gonna dunk on him at all turn, and I hope our quote makes it to him so he can yell at me in the media. It'll just be me. Uh-huh. It's fine.
Well, he had some good answers. I'm excited he's on the team. He talked about being detail-oriented, looking at data, passing along notes on like pick-and-roll tendencies, things like that to other guys, digging through film already. I think he's going to, whether we like him or not, he's going to be a presence in the locker room and between games that is helping push guys towards winning tendencies, as well as on the court taking charges and things like that.
Like, which, I mostly agree with that. I really do. Mm-hmm. But I am concerned, I guess, that he's a volatile personality. And when the situation has no guarantee of working out smoothly, another volatile personality can easily be like one too many.
Yeah, that's understandable. I think it makes sense. I guess from my perspective, his like flavor of volatility is more a desire to win and put in the right work, and more in a, I don't know if you're going to hate me for this comparison, but like in a kind of Kobe sort of like, we're here to win kind of deal. So he's going to push guys towards those winning behaviors. I'm not saying he's as accomplished as Kobe or as good as Kobe or any of those things, but it's not that he's just a loose cannon.
He just takes it too far.
Yeah. Yeah, potentially. We'll have to see how it plays out. But I think overall he'll be a positive contributor to the team. We'll see how it looks. Kendrick Nunn, healthy. I'm excited about I don't know that they talked about it yesterday, but like he's been running fives for a couple weeks. So the people in the Discord they're going to be excited to hear that, because there's been a lot of like, who is Kendrick Nunn? Who is that? Look, kind of jokes. So excited to have him back. One last thing I want to say with this team is it's going to be more how far this team goes is partially dependent on what LeBron and AD look like. But they also need these other pieces to fall in place. The scheme matters. Nunn being healthy matters. Reeves taking a step up matters. Thomas Bryant and or Damian Jones like being reliable stretch big matters. Russ buying into like a bench role, is playing some defense matters. The Lakers not screwing around with rotations for the first 2 months of the year. All those things matter. Like, you can look at the Lakers title team and you can look at AD's 2017-2018 Pelicans team that didn't go anywhere. The top two players on both of those teams produced about the same amount of impact, which is crazy to think about. That's how good AD was that year. Him and Drew Holiday were about just as good as LeBron and AD were the title year in the regular season from an aggregate impact standpoint. It's the other 13 guys on the roster that had a massive difference for the Lakers title team. That, you know, the KCPs, the Carusos, the Kuzmas, the Markieff Morrises, the, you know, all of those guys, the Danny Greens. This team needs to find those guys. We need Troy Brown Jr., JTA, Kendrick Nunn, Pat Beverly, Austin Reeves. They need to be good. If they're not good, this team's not going anywhere. So as much as we can focus on the stars, we need those, you know, supplementary pieces to fit and play well. And, you know, that's going to start. It started today in practice. So we'll see how it looks.
Yep. We'll be keeping our eye out for the first of a few practices coming out. But yeah, that's all I got so far, Tim. Thank you for hopping on. I know it's midweek. It's tough for us. We're going to try and do these as often as we can. I know Tim and I are both super busy and on different time zones, but we'll do our best. It's going to be sporadic. I apologize, but just, you know, keep that subscription active and you'll be notified. Shoot us a screenshot of a 5-star rating or review to get access to our Discord. And yeah, anything else you got, Tim?
Well, I was just going to say, I wasn't available to podcast Sunday because I had to fly to Florida and then also back from Florida because there was a hurricane. And my plans got changed very late. I don't think anyone should ever have to go through that, you know, flying round trip to and from a location in a day. But
sorry.
Yeah, we'll try to. It's so stupid. It's such a stupid thing. I was up.
It's like meme, you know, where the Grandpa Simpson walks in the bar and like puts his hat on the rack and then just does a circle and then grabs the hat and walks out the door.
That was it. Yeah, that was it. Only I had to like sprint to catch the flight back. It was miserable. But we'll try to, you know, we're not gonna. I think you said sporadic.
We're trying to do it weekly. It just might not be on the same day every week. But we want to keep this going. We have a lot of fun, and it'll be a very interesting first few weeks, I think, Tim, with a lot to talk about. So I'm excited, actually, and this media day definitely. I was a little bit more excited for some of the stuff that I thought I would be by the end. So there's the exceptionalism for y'all.
Where's your left con right now? I moved from a 2 back to a 3 because I feel good about the scheme, Nunn's health, the rotations, the team's attempts for trades, which I think publicly have gotten very obscured, but they appear to be looking for the right things. I'm more optimistic. I know. I think you were at a one, which was the lowest. Is that still where you'd say you are?
No, I'd probably say I'm a two, but it's like that's not champ. We're not a championship team by any means. So, you know, I think they could be an okay playoff team with Anthony Davis and LeBron James on your team. You know, weird shit happens. Get lucky with a break or an injury or something. Like, that's how basketball breaks sometimes, you know. But no, generally, like, kind of worried. Yeah, I think. Pretty worried. Fairly worried. Slightly less worried.
Yeah. I think that's fair. I think I'm anticipating certain things pan out that we still have yet to see concretely pan out, which might be the more appropriate time to change the LeFcon. But anyway. We'll keep an eye out. Preseason's coming up soon.
Thank you, everybody. Talk to you next time.